I thought I'd try to give you some examples now. I've taken some dreams from the Dream Analysis Seminar. This is from page 105, if you would care to look. I'll tell you the situation. The man is in a sexless marriage. He's a Swiss businessman, Saul Jung in the 20s, and he visits prostitutes on his sojourns to Eastern Europe. And he comes into Jung to solve this problem. So the conflict there would be sex and marriage. They're the two opposites. He can have sex, but he can't have relationship. He can have relationship, but he can't have sex. It sounds simple, but if you're caught in that conflict, it's not so simple. So I've just picked out a couple of dreams to give you a taste of how this appears inwardly and how Jung work with it. He says, I'm shortening these dreams for the sake of time.
Are you on your notes?
No.
Okay.
Oh, no, sorry. This is from the Seminar of Dream Analysis, the book Jung published. I possess a sort of cage or a wagon. A cage which might be for lions or tigers. The cage consists of different compartments. In one of them I have four small chickens. I must watch them carefully because they are always trying to escape. But in spite of my frantic efforts, they do escape. So there are that's his fragmented personality. He's trying to get it together, but despite his best intents, he goes to Poland, has a couple of drinks, and ends up sleeping with a prostitute. Comes home and feels bad. So he can't quite keep all his resolves under control. There's a lot more to that, but that's just to give you a taste. But here's the killer dream, I think, that really shows exactly how the unconscious, now that he's paying attention to himself, starts generating this process. I'm touring in my car near the Riviera. Someone tells me the high road and the low road. The Riviera is on it's a cliff that comes up to the ocean in the south of France, and there's a road that goes on top, and there's a road that goes down below. On the level of the ocean. Someone tells me the high road and the low road can be used from now on only by those who stay for 2 months in the country. That all cars have to go one way on the lower road and the other way on the upper. These regulations change every day. Monday it is so, while Tuesday it goes the other way, so that one could enjoy the beautiful view from every direction. Someone shows me a map with a plan of the two roads. Green and white circles indicate the days of the week and the direction to be observed by the visitors east-west, west-east. The visitors who were there for only a short time need not observe the regulations, and I thought it rather illogical that they could go just as they pleased. I also heard that other visitors were protesting against these regulations, because one had to pay for permission to travel on these roads for not less than 6 years. We all thought that terribly exaggerated. So, you see, taking responsibility for the opposites is this business of realizing there are certain rules to be followed in traversing the two extremes that he has. And if you are a psychological tourist, if you're not really interested in growth, then you don't have to worry about that. But to solve his problem, he's being shown that he has to commit himself to back and forth, recognizing his two tendencies and just living with the conscious recognition of how they are in conflict. Part of him doesn't like this. That's the part at the end that is protesting. A little later, he dreams the following dream. Again, I'm shortening it. He sees a machine, and there's a big cylinder around which revolve a number of small cylinders with apparently irregular globular surfaces. And I envision it something like this. A round piece with little circles indented in it to turn, like little ball bearings inserted in a larger cylinder. So see, these would be the various opposites. But you notice now they're starting to come together. The main cylinder is not entirely globular. It has indentations of the big one, and also into those small ones on either side, like the action of a cogwheel, there are smaller wheels. He says that he is at once aware that the machine is not working well. Something does not function as it should. So he tries to move each cylinder by itself, to turn each one so that the main round surface is visible on top. Then he calls a mechanic and explains to him, speaking French, that he has changed the position of the round circles of these cylinders, and now the machine will function better. So the mechanic would be the part of him that would have the capacity to continue working on this problem and to touch and see each of the various components of his conflict. And as he does that, then the thing begins to work. So the unconscious starts out with things out of control, then shows him how he has to commit himself to recognizing how he is tossed back and forth by these opposites, to eventually showing him getting all these opposites in one place, touching them all or feeling them all, and then that circle begins to function as a unity again.
So did he see one of those circles being non-functional?
The whole thing didn't work.
The whole thing.
But as he readjusted the circles, the whole unit began to function.
Is that kind of like the whole is different from the sum of its parts?
Whole is greater than the sum of the parts.
And that's what's new, that's the new thing?
That's the new thing. And that is generated from within. It's there at the beginning, although we're out of touch with it, by touching, feeling each of our conflicting tendencies, we set the stage for the reemergence of this self.
So does that mean that, related to what I was going to ask, is that you have more than just one conflict, that you have multiple conflicts?
Yeah.
That usually works that way. Mm-hmm.
Or you might find that you have one main conflict, but it's made up of different parts. Yeah, don't get too confused about the number of pulls. The point is that they are working to pull you one way one moment and one way the next.
And the other thing is the mechanic didn't have to fix the whole thing. He just started working on a couple of them, and that started, so again, the whole situation may appear overwhelming, but even whatever little work you do starts to happen.
Yeah, and I think the key is that he touches all the parts. And then the whole comes into being. Again, we don't create the whole, but we set the precondition for its emergence. I can't really see with the sun, maybe if I can. Can you see the colors in that water? Yeah, it's better back here. These are a series of pictures, just to give you another example, where it's shown very artistically, very beautiful, the same process. How these opposites come together. Now, we
I'm not going to go into all the dreams. Each of these paintings is a painting from a dream. But for the sake of time, I just wanted to show you how this series will look if it's drawn. So, where do you see the opposites in that circle? Kind of a trick question.
Around the circle?
No. It's not, actually. I'm just not sure I want it there. There's an opposite. And there's why do I say that? Yeah. Roy G. Biv. Red, orange, yellow, green, blue, indigo, violet. See, it's the two ends of the color spectrum. And you see how they are not mixing.
What is the thing that's wrapped around you?
Well, that's a reference to a dream. To make a long story short, it keeps the circle floating in the dream. And it would suggest that that possibility is not yet ready to come into contact with real life on Earth yet. But we'll see it. Now, the snake, again, I'm being very simplistic here, just for the sake of time. Let's say the snake would have to do with the therapeutic effect, with the effect of beginning to focus on the inner conflict. And you see its effect is to make the red redder and the blue bluer. So the two extremes are becoming more sharply delineated. That's very simplistic, but it'll work for our purposes. Now you see how the opposites are more strongly activated within, and the blue and the red are more clearly seen as separate and incompatible entities. So this would be the period of focusing on what the conflicting tendencies are. And to be very simple again, let's say it's the conflict between thinking and feeling, between mind and body. That's very simple, but I'm just trying to give you some flesh on these bones without spending too much time on it. Now, look what's going on. The red is being pulled into the blue. So these opposites are now beginning to unite. And as that happens, that should be green, a growth starts at the center. Well, that growth at the center is this resolved condition that we've been talking about.
Resolved.
The resolution of the conflict will be up. Well, it's the, but I originally showed you the pictures to try to give you a sense. It's a new thing.
Yeah.
It's a new thing. And, you know, I don't think, and this may sound outrageous, I don't think anyone before Jung has seen this. I think Jung is the first person to have documented that how the personality creates its own future, apparently out of nothing. It just is a new dimension of psychological reality. I think that's, for me, the easiest way to think. You don't find this anywhere in Freud. You don't find this, I don't think you find it in any other psychology that I know of.
So, A new paradigm out of nothing.
Well, I would say, and you've anticipated our seminar on Ion, but there is nothing in our current paradigm that explains this. And Jung knew this.
Yeah.
So his book Ion is going to try to explain just your question. So you see, he's running on and he says, holy smokes, there's nothing in the paradigm that explains this. I better write another book about that. So all these other books that we're talking about will be offshoot of the implications of what we're looking at now. Definitely. From an essay called A Study in the Process of Individuation, which is in Volume 9.1. which is called The Archetypes and the Eclectic Unconscious.
And there's also an individual book on Mongolos that's got them all in there in color.
In paperback, probably. Yeah. But what I wanted to show you is how opposites are, the word we use is constellated, activated, brought into effective awareness, and then something else takes over.
And we'll tell us more about what it was like living with that,
what
it feels like.
Well, I could.
Well, I think experience. You were.
Yeah, it's a good question. How does it feel when this happens? Well, I think you begin to recover the sense that you're a valuable person. That's the first thing. That you have a place on this earth, and that you don't have to go around apologizing for your existence. And so confidence, I want to say this carefully because it's not about control, because you've given up control to this process. But as this develops, you are less controlled by noxious influences from the environment and more living from what you know is your truth. But in other words, you begin living from what you know is your dream. If other people don't like it, too bad. And it's not an adolescent, you know, screw you. It's not a negative first and then, you know, some piddly alternative. It's the positive that is just not as easily swayed by attacks from the outside. I think it is also the birth of real creativity. That what you are giving to the world is something new and valuable. It's the capacity for reciprocal love. It's the capacity for generosity. But not compulsively, you know, generous. Knowing what your boundaries are to be, yet within that sense of independence and lack of guilt, a genuine sharing.
Do the dreams as in this person was an artist?
No.
She was?
No.
I was wondering if the manifestation in the dream was some gift that you have, and maybe somebody else would have.
That's another good way to put it. It would be the bringing to the world of what you're doing stuff. I think she became an analyst, if I'm not mistaken. We don't really know. If you read between the lines, I think I figured out it might be Beatrice Hinkle who did this, but I'm not sure.
I'm just thinking about like the screen would be maybe an athlete. Would an athlete draw these kind of things? Would he have dreams like that?
Sure. Well, you know, I grant you that they are very beautiful. I can't draw with it. But when I have been moved by a dream, it's remarkable how well I've been able to draw it. I think that's what we're seeing. We're not seeing artistic talent. We're seeing moved by experiences that allow the person to paint them.
Yeah. Do those shifts, the newness that emerges, do that happen in a person's life without a person especially paying attention to dreams?
I think it can, yes. Probably most of us are here because either somewhere along the line we got stopped, or we were told, don't be yourself, don't feel what you feel, don't think what you think, here's what you should think. Or that we are to bring something to the world that is quite new and we just need help getting it out there. There's not that there's something holding us back, but the nature of the challenge is such that we need guidance to do it. But I think most of us probably were told, you know, I mean, I'm thinking of an artist I was working with who was told, art is stupid, you should study math, and went to the college hating math. That sort of a thing where the real self has been denigrated somewhere along the path of being raised.
I just share something intuitively. We spoke about the alchemy, and you said that you take the opposite, they put in the vessel, mm-hmm. and somehow they get together, they come together, it's like a sexual union, mm-hmm. and out of that is a pregnancy, and then a rebirth. For some reason, when I saw the very first one, it was the opposites, you know, and suspended,
yeah.
and the snake seemed to penetrate. To me, it was like sperm penetrating the egg.
Yes.
And then the birth happened, and each slide evolved just like if you were watching human yeah. embryo development. Yeah.
Oh, there's that dimension to it. I'm just trying to make this
simple. Let's see, this process has been happening to me right now. In fact, just 2 days ago, I got a resolution of the conflict that I've had all of my life. And two parts of myself that have been in war for 60 years, suddenly this little voice said, well, I could have both. And so all of the energy that went into that boomeranging back and forth is now available to create something, a cooperative action. And that's the new thing. So you don't lose any of the other stuff. But, I mean, it's unbelievable to say, well, why couldn't I have gotten these two together before? But it wasn't. And now they're there, and so now we can figure out how to work, you know, walk like this instead of this kind of thing.
Well, that then here is the symbolized by the goal.
Yeah. And there's a huge release of energy that is just
which
being
is
eaten
not.
Up by the other stuff.
What about the kind of person, it seems to me also that some people resist making the change.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
George Bush.
For a long time.
We will look at that. We will look at that. Remember, this is Jung, like, just trying to get you guys into it. How this all works and all the complications in it working, that's yours. But I'm just trying to give you a sense of the basic paradigms in the book, what they look like. So if you go to the study guide and you have, okay, here we are. This is what we're talking about. Okay.
Gary,
yes.
One of these things you're talking about with the transformation team, you know, a lot of people who've gone through this death, particularly those who went to the gym, they end up becoming therapists.
Yeah.
That becomes that one of the paradigms.
Yeah. Yes.
So that's another outcome of death.
Definitely. Yeah.
Which is probably the ultimate.
Yeah, this, you know, you were asking earlier about what we think is what's operative. What's operative in Jung's view is that the therapist has done this themselves. And there's sort of a magnetic induction effect. And so no amount of books will get you there. Okay, let's go back to the guide. I think I will try to summarize at the bottom of page 2.
You know, though, at the same time, there's just a pretty sick people that have done some pretty profound therapy. I mean, even Jung prior to going through
the Well, I think there are plenty of sick therapists out there. Yeah. And they don't work like this. And then they come to me, and we try to put them back together again.
Yeah, but this process, it seems to me, is going on whether or not somebody's necessarily taking that approach in.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. What Jung has done is simply delineate, I think, what's a natural process, and then say, how do we understand it when it's stuck? Or when it wants to occur but needs guidance.
Like when there's anything between us, because it could be
right.
The one that
no, she was a therapist.
She, yeah, the one that she said that she was the one who started last month. and I don't want to know how he's poetry, he's going for a training, but she got stuck.
Oh, in volume 5, you mean? Yeah, mm-hmm. Right. Right.
Somebody was there to come in.
Right. Yeah. Well, this is probably obvious by now, but Jung tries to give a diagram for this process, and I don't want to get ahead of myself here. I'm going to come back because I can't see it very well. Nothing new, just a diagram for what we've said. But it's what is this? I'm going to summarize what is written at the bottom of this is page 2.
Yes.
A, B, C, it says A, B, C, D.
Oh, it's not enough?
Yeah.
Yeah.
No?
No.
No. Well,
I think what
you're
describing that without saying
B, C, D. Yeah, it's described. What I'm doing is describing where it says, for example, Jung describes.
Okay, yeah.
Describes a text which diagrams the alchemical process. And then we're dealing with alchemy, but we're interpreting as a metaphor the same thing, that the initial condition is a point, which then evolves out to four different opposites, and then it's very weak. And then moves back again. So we start at a point, we go out to the opposites, and then we come back again. And they represented this process by that circle around A, as the dynamism that moves it out, and the dynamism that moves back. Just gives a diagram of what we're talking about. But the reason I threw it in there is that's a picture, that's a diagram of Mercurius. Mercurius is the beginning state. Mercurius is the middle circle, which means the drive out to the opposites. And Mercurius is the middle circle, meaning the drive back to the center. And for the alchemist, that was a living presence in the material. There was something in the material that when they cooked it right and they did all the things right, would expand the material out into its various pieces. And then when they continue to cook it right, they might pray, they might do it in a certain time of year, it's all the astrological references, it would come back into the center again. When it came back to A again, it would be gold. And you'll be just taking this amount. And if Mercurius, because he's the beginning, the middle, and the end. And here it is. The seam in the center there, The alchemical process was often represented as the growth of a tree. So Mercurius is the end, the bottom point, he's the top point, and then he's that dynamism in between. So that in their mind, what was happening in the material was like the growth of a tree from a little seed to a tree. And Jung says, what a perfect metaphor for growth. And sure enough, one of the big images in dreams at this point in therapy is a tree. The tree is that process of transformation from the beginning to the end through the opposites. There's another picture of Mercurius. You see, he's often, not always, but very often depicted between two opposites, the sun and the moon, and the reconciler. Sometimes he's depicted as a woman. And here he's got one foot on, I wish I had a color picture, this was the only thing available. But apparently the left pedestal is gold and the right pedestal is silver. The left pedestal is gold and the right pedestal is silver. So he's standing on the two opposites. Gold would be the sun, silver would be the moon. So you can see the wings around the fountains would be the dynamism within the beginning condition, and he is what unites them. He, she is what unites them.
Well, the thing I would think a little bit you know that the tree is kind of going one way.
Yes.
And but this process seems more far.
Yes.
So my mind's having a little trouble.
Well, but you got to remember, in a dream you can be in Paris and Rome at the same time, mm-hmm. and it's just one of Jung's purposes of doing this is to show all the variety of images that are possible, and it is true they are not logically consistent. But if you think symbolic, you just let that go.
The tree also has
layers. You know, when you cut the tree, it has layers. Mm-hmm. So it's like
moving out.
Sometimes Mercurius is represented as a duality. And he's very often associated with fire because it's the emotional, again, it's a metaphor. The emotional process which moves this transformation forward.
That takes us to page 3. Yeah. The pictures. The colored ones are from volume 9-1 that I mentioned. The black and whites are from volume 12, Psychology and Alchemy, or from this. I tell you, give me a. I got about another month of kind of being under the gun. But give me about a month, and I'll put all this up on my website with the list of the photographs. Study guide will be there that you can follow up on it. But I'm kind of swamped for about another month, but I'll get them up. It's and I'll give you the URL at the end. I'll mention it now. It's jgsparks.net, and then /folio, F-O-L-I-O. I'll have it there. Top of page 3, I'm going to skip that. And all what I've done there is Jung sort of gives us some provisional images of what the goal is like, what the end point is like. We'll come back to that at the very end. I'll just mention very briefly, strangely, sometimes that end point, which you would think is very positive, which is very positive and has positive images, gold, circles, diamonds, images of symmetry, can also be symbolized by a widow or an orphan. And the point he's just making, how what that represents is that you are giving up your dependence on outer support, you no longer relate to the world as a parent, for inner support. But I just throw that in to show you how he dances around various images. What I really want to do now is go to the next paradigm. So the first one was separation and union. Everybody comfortable? The second one is extraction.
I asked just one nasty question. This is off the subject, but does he do the later on, does he do the same thing, story, try to get you to take what he's done and to look at his society as a whole and say, look how the groups are behaving, group life is behaving similarly?
That's Ion.
Okay.
Stay tuned.
Okay.
Definitely. Yeah, he's looking at how does all this play out in society, and where are we as a culture that this stuff is coming up now? Sort of, it's been several questions have touched on that. Yeah, and it really is introducing a new grasp of reality. And that's why he became interested in physics, quantum physics, because he felt they too were. Presenting a new paradigm, and that there was a parallel between the new things he was seeing and the new things they were seeing. But that, and that will be the last one we do. Okay. The big metaphor for the paradigm of synthesis and of opposites and synthesis was alchemy. Now that continues through the second paradigm of extraction. But he brings in another source too, which is Gnosticism. So he really turns to two mythological paradigms or two mythological systems as metaphor for this process of transformation. Let me tell you a little bit about Gnosticism. I'm sure not everyone knows about it. Is that a fair assumption? Okay.
Beginning, you mentioned that there were two basic metaphors used in the book, and those were two, alchemy and Gnosticism.
Yes. I would say two basic, yes, although two basic paradigms, the opposition and synthesis is one, and the extraction is the other. Alchemy he used for the first, and alchemy and Gnosticism for the second. But Gnosticism really says it very clearly for the second. The Gnostics were, is a name given to a set of cults. Prevalent at the birth of Christianity, but probably pre-existent. There's probably Jewish Gnosticism. You know, what we now call the church, what we now call Christianity, is simply the coalescing of one point of view into official theology. But at that time, first 100 or 200 or 300 years, there were many different interpretations of what happened. And the Gnostics, the Gnosticism is the name given to one set of those interpretations, later declared heresy by the church. And the Gnostics have, as being various groups of Gnostics, had many differing interpretations, but they all share pretty much in a couple of basic ideas. And the basic idea is that when God created the world, God got trapped in the world. There are many different varieties of how that happened. But there are little sparks of God in the world, according to the Gnostics. And so there's a little spark of God in each of us. And the nature of Gnostic religion is, how do the faithful live so that when they die, or when the Redeemer comes, the peace of God that's in them goes back to the big God. So in the Gnostic mind, it's not individuals who need salvation, it's God. Because at the creation of the world, God gets lost in the world. Now, the text that we're going to look at, this is from, I'm going to give you just a couple of quick references, is from Manichaeism. Manichaeism is one type of Gnosticism. You want to look there under 2.2 on page 3. Manichaeism is a form of Gnosticism. As I said, the basic tenet of Gnosticism is that the divine world gets trapped in the material world. In the Manichaean version, a divine messenger is then sent to the lower world to rescue the trapped light. The messenger seduces the dark powers, by holding the light and forces them to release their light, either by sweating it out of them or by ejaculation. So Ettinger's interpretation, now I'm going to go to Ettinger a bit just to make it simple. Consciousness, if we take this as a metaphor, consciousness sends a messenger to the unconscious so that we entertain our forbidden desires. And thus a kind of sweat box is generated that can lead to the extraction of the light stuff imprisoned in the unconscious complexes. So the Gnostic idea is that God is trapped in matter, and interpreting that psychologically, the other paradigm that works with this holds the view that if you can live with these emotions, these difficult situations in life that you find yourself in, and begin asking the right kind of questions about why am I here? Why do I feel this? Why has this happened to me? What emotions are driving me? And could they be here to teach me something? Meaning is extracted out of that experience. And that meaning is this positive influence of the unconscious that we earlier described as the image that synthesizes opposites. So there are two ways to it, by synthesizing opposites and by holding difficult situations in life and their emotional effect on us and seeing the meaning of that experience so that what starts out as an emotional complication ends up as an insight. And two of the frequent images that are used in this process are, right from the text, sweating and sex. Let me give you an example. This I'm taking from the Vision Seminars. Jung's Vision Seminars. The Jung's patient is about a 30-year-old woman who is caught in a marriage triangle. She's in love with two men. And having an affair with the second man. And she comes into therapy asking, how in the hell can I get out of this mess? So that mess, see, would be like the earth that is holding the light. That is the difficult situation from which she must extract meaning. Does that make sense, everybody? Jung is not trying to get people out of their problem. He's trying to get them to grow through them. And when they understand what they are to learn by living through them, then the problem will dissolve. Because it's his view that problems don't only have causes, they have purposes. And the purpose of problems very often is to change the way we live. So I'm going to read you now actually a hypnagogic vision. It's a sort of a waking dream this woman has as she goes to sleep. I'm going to shorten it a bit. A young man arrives on a boat. And he goes to a cave where there were three witches. He goes to one of the witches and he tears the tooth out of the mouth of one of the witches. Then he was attacked by fierce animals until he was bleeding with many wounds. After that, an old man appeared and drove all the wild beasts away. He wrapped the young man in a blanket and laid him upon a rock with his face to the sky. And that night, a circle of fire descended and burned in a flaming circle about the youth. Then the youth said, I'm the sacrifice, and the fire consumed him. A white bird issued from his breast and flew up beyond the reach of the flames. Does that make sense, or do I need to read it again? A young man, again I'm shortening it, goes into a cave where there are three witches. I'm going to stop there just for a second. Three witches you should be thinking of. Fates, the three fates. So he's approaching fate. Or he's approaching what is controlling her fate. What's her fate? This love affair. He goes up to the witch, one of the witches, and he tears the tooth from her mouth. Big mistake. See, that would be the side of her that's trying to solve this affair with reason, to change her fate. But her fate, in fact, is to love two men at this point in her life. So she's trying to get out of that fate. And we see what a bad idea it is, because as soon as he does that, he is attacked by fierce animals. So the fierce animals would represent her instinctuality. Instinctuality is what has led her into this affair with the other man. And you see the relationship here between instinct and fate. The problem only gets worse when she tries to avoid it. So it is her fate to go with those animals, and they attack the part of her that would try to get out of her problem by sheer moral choice. Then the young man, which would be her naive rationalism in trying to solve this problem, drove away all the beasts. He wrapped the youth in a blanket and laid him on a rock.
Who comes and drives?
An old man.
Oh, an old man.
The youth is laying then on the rock facing the sky, and a circle of fire descends, burning him up. He says, I am the sacrifice, and a white bird issued from his breast and flew up beyond the reach of the flames. So the willful attitude that wants to cheat fate out of what it has created for her is sacrificed. And out of that sacrifice comes the white bird, which would be the right way of understanding her situation. So that's an image of extraction out of a difficult emotional situation where she gives up her willfulness and a new capacity for understanding symbolized by the dove emerges. And I've got some pictures for you.
Just going back to Offering the Sweat Box, this is from an alchemical text. So they're taking this as what happens to something in the material that it's cooked and sweated out. You see that? The man is being cooked and the bird is emerging from his hand. Let's see if that helps. But this is the one that our patient here.
So being that the dummy hand will
here, I think it's a way of understanding that is adequate to grasping the dilemma that she's in. and that she will never be able to control her desires with sheer reason. Oh, she can control them for the short time, but in the long term, there's a hunger in her that needs to be satisfied.
So, does that mean that's a somewhat positive image?
Sure, yes. I mean, the death of the man would be the death of her willfulness, the death of the young man would be the death of her willfulness. And the dove would be the insight, the understanding, and a sense of how to live with this dilemma that will replace willfulness.
The dove is the same as willfulness.
Yeah. The wise way to go is not to moralistically solve the problem by running away from it. That's the fire we saw in the curious.
And the dove is going towards the fire.
Above the fire, you see. That will be what will allow her eventually to give up this relationship because she's lived through its meaning rather than to just try to get out of it with more power. So, again, we're talking about this image of extraction, and this is the kind of imagery that comes up when people are in a very difficult situation, often a love triangle, or some sexual situation, where the desire is problematic. And despite their will, despite their best intentions, they can't get rid of it. Or it could be a situation characterized by very negative emotions. And despite their best self, they can't shake it. So that would be, in the Gnostic image, that would be the earth. The life on earth and the desires for life on earth have become problematic. What we see when we work at the unconscious level with this material is that very often that problematic looking situation holds a secret that we need to understand about ourselves and which we will not get until we live through it. So in the Gnostic model, the light has to be retrieved from its being trapped, the divinity, light as divinity, has to be released from being trapped in matter. And in the psychological interpretation of that, an insight, a wisdom, the way to live, the way to cope, a new set of values, a new way of understanding is meant to come out of that difficult objective situation and the difficult emotions that accompany it.
So then basically, if we can have it every time, the
situation
like that,
that
holds the whole process?
Well, hopefully not. What usually happens if you can complete this as you are being asked is that when these experiences come back later, you can work with them imaginatively. But it seems that at the beginning, and sometimes you can work with them imaginatively at the beginning, but sometimes you have to live through them so that you don't have to keep repeating the same thing later. The desires may come back, but you're able to relate to them differently. For those of you who are in the field of psychology, this is the basis of Jung's understanding of transference. We'll get to that at the end too. But a difficult situation between two people that has a meaning. I'll read you one more dream. Very similar situation. Some of us have been studying the dreams of a physicist who we will discuss at the very end of this series, Wolfgang Pauli. Pauli was one of the guys who developed quantum physics.
and which is the physics that made the bomb possible. And when the bomb went off, even though he didn't work on it, he got very depressed. And Pally was living in Zurich. After the war, he wasn't during the war because he had to go to the States because he was Jewish. He got out of Switzerland. But after the war, he came back to Switzerland and went to see Jung with his dreams. So we have a record of his dreams after the war in response to his despair over the bomb. And in the process, he managed to fall in love with Marie-Louise von Franz, which was very awkward because he was married. But and worked with Jung then on these dreams and how, at least for a time, how to negotiate this complicated situation, which he never really did resolve. But von Franz would have been instrumental in helping him do the kind of writing and public speaking about the psychology of science and its contribution to the nuclear age, which he alone probably was capable of doing. So you see, here it's not just an insight. It's a whole way of life that is trying to be born out of his attraction to just the one person who knew both physics and Jung backwards and forwards. And in the middle of his burning for her, he had this dream. I see large striped objects lying on the floor. They look similar to coconuts, but are somewhat longer and are of gray-green color. Again, I'm simplifying. Now a man comes with a big hammer and smashes them one after the other. At that, the stripes vanish. Then he takes the broken pieces in his hand. The pieces are like shell-shaped containers, and to my astonishment, I see that they contain a liquid clear like water. The man drinks this and immediately becomes progressively younger, his gray hair becoming darker and finally brown. Maybe I should find some of those. And now I say it is important that the objects don't have a power of their own. See, it's a big mistake. The juice appears to have the healing power. He nods in the affirmative and adds, "When I drink this liquid, I don't need to go to war." So there, the love experience would be symbolized by the coconuts, the succulent fruit. And what he's being shown is the necessity of breaking into that experience and extracting the meaning out of that experience, which is the liquid that drips, that the man drips. The meaning of that experience was the shift in his own creativity towards addressing the kind of questions, addressing the kind of answers that would have been adequate to the questions he was asking. How has science become so destructive? So that's an extraction model. Both cases, one starts with the chaos. In the first case, the chaos is made up of various pieces and has to be endured in its various pieces until the activity of our personality creates that synthesis, which would be the guidance that comes from within, how we are to live, who we are, what we are to think, the strength and the confidence to do so. In the second case, the extraction model is dealing with a very complicated outer situation and complicated emotions, and not giving up on that situation until its meaning is understood. When its meaning is understood, then the emotions and the situation dissolve.
So synthesis and extraction are two paths to the goal?
Yes. They're the two basic models that Jung has worked with. And I hope you can see how what Jung has done is simply take Freud's ideas of the importance of instinct and say they're important not simply as facts in and of themselves, but as portals to further growth in the realization of the person you were put here to be. So as far as I can see it, Jungian psychology is the further evolution of Freudian psychology toward its logical conclusion. It's just the instincts are starting points for spiritual growth, spiritual with a small s, not simply biological realities that are seeking satisfaction. They are that as well, but when you relate to them consciously, you see how they contribute to the formation of another dimension of your awareness.
So can you have synthesis and attraction in the same dream?
Well, anything's possible. And, you know, I think what we're doing here, you know, we're trying to work with the forces of nature in our process. And it can do anything at once. And Jung is just trying to bring some order into it for the purposes of our understanding.
The reason I asked that is because I was following your ideas about alchemy.
Uh-huh.
And you can relate that to present-day chemistry.
Uh-huh.
And in the present-day chemistry also, there tends to be synthesis and extraction going together.
I would say any permutation, yeah. I'm trying to give you guys the very basic ideas. Well, I think we're not doing too bad. That takes us to the middle of page 3. And what we'll do in the afternoon now is look at a couple of recipes. Now we know this basic paradigm. Look at recipes, alchemical recipes, which Jung has interpreted, to shed further light on all the kind of permutations of images and twists and turns in our two basic plots. And then we'll turn to the main constituents the alchemists use to symbolize these opposites, the sun and the moon. And the different ways the sun and the moon are personified, the sun as a lion, the sun as sulfur, and the moon as a dog, and the moon as salt. So recipes, and then basic opposites of alchemy. And let's have a lunch. So we'll meet back here at 1, and we'll pick up and move on from here.
Okay.